Is Democratic gubernatorial challenger Mary Burke a hypocrite as charged by the Republican Party of Wisconsin? Why did Scott Walker outraise her 2-1 in money for their race for governor? We'll talk about these issues and many more during this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Plus, how do you think President Obama is handling the immigration crisis, the crisis with the U.S.-Mexico border? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We welcome your input on the issues that we discuss. We'll talk about all top state and national news stories and politics. Plus, you can bring up a story that happened in the news this week, and our guests will respond. Let's welcome our guest. Very happy to have with us Peg Lautenschlager, a former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin, former state lawmaker, and former United States Attorney, now an attorney with the law firm of Bauer and Bach. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Keen.
And Keen joins us from our studios in Wausau. Keen Winters is a financial planner in Schofield and a member of the Wausau City Council. Good morning, Keen.
Good morning, everyone.
All right. Well, we're going to start with some state issues. It was just reported in our Wisconsin Public Radio newscast that Wisconsin has appealed a federal judge's ruling from last month striking down the state's ban on same-sex marriages as unconstitutional. Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen filed the appeal yesterday, as he indicated at the time of the original ruling that he would. U.S. District Judge Barbara Crabb ruled on June 6th that the ban, approved by voters in 2006, was a violation of gay couples' equal protection and due process rights. So, Peg Lautenschlager, no surprise that this appeal was filed, but your reaction?
Well, obviously it's not a surprise that the appeal has been made. My sense is that with the cases going around throughout the country, the one sad factor about this is, as Wisconsin, it does this appeal and preserves the current injunction that's been had, not allowing gay marriage despite the judge's ruling, that that kind of action and the appeal just kind of cost taxpayers money. The reality is there are cases like this going on, as I mentioned, throughout the United States, and one of them will eventually be decided. And when that happens, that decision will likely be controlling in terms of gay marriage throughout the nation. So, Wisconsin can, join in the club, I guess, in terms of all of the states that are appealing federal court rulings of this sort, and eventually we'll know the answer.
Yeah, Colorado is the latest in a string of 16 states that have seen their bans on same-sex marriages tossed out by state and federal judges. Colorado's ban was overturned on Wednesday of this week. Keen Winters, is this a waste of money for J.B. Van Hollen to appeal this ruling by Barbara Crabb?
Well, I'll start by agreeing with Peg that I think the conclusion of this is probably foregone. But I'm not sure it's a waste of money. I support judicial review, and particularly when we strike down ordinary legislation. But this is a constitutional amendment. And in that case, it's not just an ordinary law. Before it gets struck down, it really should go through a very thorough process. And so I think I want to step out and say that I'm in favor of that process, and I understand that it does cost money, but this is a constitutional amendment we're talking about. We shouldn't just willy-nilly get rid of it.
In other news, the state Republican Party is accusing Democratic gubernatorial candidate Mary Burke of being a hypocrite for saying that she wants to outlaw campaign donations from outside Wisconsin. The Republican Party circulated footage of Burke making the comment yesterday during a campaign stop in Green Bay. She has repeatedly said she believes special interest money from outside Wisconsin has too much influence on campaigns. The Republican Party's executive director says Burke is a hypocrite because she got roughly $1.1 million in donations this year from outside the state. The Burke campaign says they're playing by the current rules. And let me get to you, Keene Winters, to respond to this. Is this really hypocritical to say you want to outlaw out-of-state money?
Well, I suppose there's a tinge of hypocrisy in it, but I find this really sort of a specious argument altogether. Look, no one really cares for outside money coming in, but what we do care for is that we have freedom of speech in this country, and that freedom can cross borders, and that's much more important. And it's easy to be a demagogue about, oh, it's money coming in from outside, but you don't really want to live in a world where people aren't free to transport their opinion or their money from one place to another.
Mm-hmm. Peg?
Well, let me first address the question at hand, which is this being hypocritical? No, it isn't. The reality is that whether or not candidates want to espouse ideas as to how campaign funding should perhaps be restricted in an ideal world doesn't mean that they necessarily have to follow those restrictions while they're running for office, because what they need to do is make certain they're playing on a level field, playing field with their opponents at the time of that particular election. So I think that those are two totally separate things. What you would like in an ideal world in terms of campaign finance and whatever is far different than how things are going when they're employed on a regular basis. That being said, I think the fundamental issue, though, comes down to what was the Citizens United decision, and before that, Buckley v. Vallejo, which Keene alluded to, in terms of our U.S. Supreme Court having, in these years, equated money with First Amendment speech rights and the spending of money with First Amendment speech rights. And I think that's something which Americans are starting to wary of, because they're seeing the incredible abuses that can take place as money can be limitless in the campaign setting. And I think that at some point in our nation's future, you will see a court, not this one obviously, walk back on the broad interpretation of First Amendment rights and money.
Well, Governor Walker and Mary Burke filed their fundraising reports this week. Governor Walker raised $8.2 million. Mary Burke, $3.6 million. So how come Governor Walker is raising so much more money than his primary Democratic challenger, Peg?
It's simply he's an incumbent, and he's an incumbent who is viewed as maybe running for some other office later on down the line. And as a result of that, he has a broad base of fundraising that he's developed in several decades now. Whereas if you look at Mary Burke, she's a newcomer to the political scene. People are looking to see who she is, what she's about, and get introduced to her. I think that you'll see her, his fundraising edge narrow as the race goes on. And I think, from the get-go, the Burke folks understood that Scott Walker would outspend them, no matter what the issue is, rather whether or not they'll have enough money to get their message across and respond to whatever message the governor and outside groups supporting him will put on the air.
Mm-hmm. Keene, your thoughts on the...
Well, I think I agree in the sense that being an incumbent creates an advantage. But I'd also rush to point out that, Keith Gilkes and company are no slouches at what they do. They are experienced campaigners. I expect people when they run a campaign to be good at blocking and tackling, and raising money is part of it. And so the Walker administration and the Walker campaign is good at what they do, and they should be given where they've gotten to.
We will be talking about the new ads that are out this week in the race for governor in Wisconsin, and many more top stories in state politics and national politics as well. And we will welcome your input on what we're discussing, or you can bring up an issue that's in the news. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking today in this edition of the Week in Review with Keene Winters, who is a financial planner in Schofield and a member of the Wausau City Council, and Peg Lautenschlager, a former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin, former state legislator, former U.S. attorney. And we have some callers, so let's go to Carol in Oak Creek first. Hello, Carol.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I wanted to mention gay marriage. I'm very much in favor of gay marriage. And as reported on the Associated Press, that Governor Scott Walker, an opponent of gay marriage, it was reported that his 19-year-old son acted as a witness at a same-sex wedding ceremony of a relative. So I'm hoping that maybe Scott Walker will evolve his opposition to gay marriage, and maybe, you know, seems like the younger people, it's no big deal to them, and it's the old fogies that are having more of a problem with gay marriage. But I remain hopeful that Wisconsin and all the other states and around the world will get gay marriage. I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, Carol. Yes, the Governor Walker was asked about his son's decision to serve as a witness at this same-sex marriage of a relative, and Walker says his son doesn't need his blessing to do anything that he does. Is this how big a deal is this, Peg?
Well, first of all, I guess it's good to know that Governor Walker recognizes, as most of us whose parented children do, that it's very difficult to get a 19-year-old to do anything you're concerned about. But and you might as well just allow them the freedom to grow up and be the people they are. That being said, I think it shows the hypocrisy of some on the political right, and I don't know if Governor Walker falls into that camp or not, where perhaps quietly they are, don't have an objection to gay marriage. I don't know that they're necessarily for it, but don't have an objection to it, but yet they're being held politically hostage by extremists within their own party who view the gay marriage issue as one of the fundamental social issue questions on which they judge candidates. And I think that it's sad when you see with one of these social issues, with one of these issues that involve civil rights of other human beings, for the affected individual's hands to be tied because of politicians catering to particular outspoken, albeit probably minority constituencies.
Mm-hmm. Keene?
Well, I would point out too, though, that Scott Walker is the governor, and he's taken an oath to defend the state constitution, and the state constitution, as it's written now, stands in opposition to gay marriage, and really he does have an obligation on that sense to fulfill that. I think the real tragedy in this issue has been the way Barbara Crabb has played politics with this by first opening the floodgates to gay marriage to create publicity and pressure her, and then cutting it off sharply to create a situation where there is, in fact, de facto unfairness. That really seems to me to be legislation from the bench and pretty unsavory legislation or tactical maneuvers. And that really has, I think, left a lot of a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Joy, if I might just add, the thing is that what you are when you're governor, you take an oath to, in any state officer, to uphold the constitution of the state as well as the constitution of the nation. And the reality is that right now we're in a state where many of the things involving gay marriage, as they've been ruled by the federal government, conflict with state law. We have the same thing with abortion. Federally, it has been ruled that the law of the land is that abortion is permissible under most circumstances, and yet you have a candidate Walker and Governor Walker opposing abortion and doing things in order to limit that right, despite the oath he's taken to uphold the laws of the land. And so I don't think it can be that simple of a reason. I think you need to acknowledge that it is a political question, and while you have an oath to uphold the law, that doesn't mean that you can't advocate for the law being changed.
Let me ask you both to just briefly respond to whether you think the same-sex marriage issue or marriage equality issue and other social issues like the Hobby Lobby decision and the response to it, are social issues like these going to play a big part in the race for governor in Wisconsin, or are we going to be mainly talking jobs? Keen?
They might play a smaller role, but I think we're still going to be talking about jobs, but we're probably going to be talking more about Act 10 than anything else.
Oh, Aunt Peg?
Well, first of all, I think that it is jobs, 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 and I think that's a good option in terms of Mary Burke running on that issue. I do think, though, there are a number of important swing voters, primarily single women, who are going to be looking at those social issues and how kind of the draconian approach that's been used by Wisconsin, both the legislature and our governor, in terms of limiting individual rights and individual liberty. And I think that those issues will play out when it comes to that important group of voters, and which that group may indeed, I think, because of those social issues coupled with the jobs issues, make a difference in this election.
We will come back in just a moment talking about the latest ads to come out of the Walker and Burke campaigns, and we'll listen to Governor Walker's ad that claims Mary Burke wasted $12.5 million in taxpayer money when she was Commerce Secretary in the Jim Doyle administration. And we'll welcome your comments about issues in the news in state and national politics during this edition of The Week in Review. If you call 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top state and national news stories of the week. Today we are talking with Keen Winters, a financial planner in Schofield, a member of the Wausau City Council, and Peg Lautenschlager, a former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin, former state lawmaker, former U.S. attorney, now an attorney with the law firm of Bauer and Bach. And we are welcoming your questions. We're welcoming the issues in the news this week that you want to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Okay, well, let's play the ad that Governor Walker's campaign released this week criticizing Mary Burke for her tenure as Governor Doyle's Commerce Secretary.
As Jim Doyle's Commerce Secretary, Mary Burke spent $12.5 million to buy a vacant lot for a company that said it had no plans to create jobs in Wisconsin. In fact, the same company had already laid off over 800 workers when Burke closed the deal. Mary Burke says she'll work to create jobs and spend our tax money wisely. But her record as Jim Doyle's Commerce Secretary tells a different story.
So was that a huge mistake to try to lure a company to Kenosha, Keen Winters?
Well, I would have to say that I have grave doubts about a lot of economic development contracts that are out there. And we see this in the city of Wausau as well, where we invested in creating jobs and the recession either erased them or they moved elsewhere. And I begin to think that this notion that you're going to invest money and essentially subsidize jobs to come somewhere probably doesn't work in the long run, and that you need to be focused on creating the climate for so lower taxes, moderate regulation, and investment in infrastructure and investment in real property. And the notion that you're going to succeed by investing a one-time investment in jobs and those jobs are going to be there forever is probably a false proposition.
Peg?
Yeah, first of all, I'd agree with Pete in terms of the subsidization of these kinds of enterprises by government. I mean, I think there was this great series in the New York Times a couple of years ago talking about that what would be more meaningful for government to do is invest in public education, in parks, in that sort of development, in infrastructure kinds of things, in order to better lure businesses, because indeed businesses want to be placing people within business want to be placing their companies in communities that are vibrant and thriving and have good public services. So I think that that should be our focus, and not the investment in one-time credits or whatever else it happens to be. Because when taxpayers start footing the bills for these businesses, they essentially become hostage to those businesses. So I agree on that in regard. As to Mary Burke's involvement in this, this is a trend we've seen in government for the last 25 years in terms of trying to keep businesses in one place or another. States, you know, essentially bidding against other states for the location of businesses, banks, states bidding against foreign nations for the location of businesses. And I think it's something which in the long term we're going to see that politicians are going to have to say, no, we have to stop doing this. It just isn't a formula that's working.
Now let's go to Nate in Milwaukee. Hello, Nate.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think that Scott Walker has every right to complain about couple million dollars that Mary Burke may have wasted, because, you know, when it comes to wasting amounts of money, I think Scott Walker's managed to do it in amounts that begin with a B in terms of billion rather than million. So this is utterly pitiful, and on top of that, at least when he did it, he managed to disrupt the plans of Minnesota when their DOT was trying to make plans to for its stretch of that railroad. So not only could he do it in a bigger amount, but at least he was able to pull off annoying the neighbors, too. And she's just been utterly incompetent in this regard. So by far, he's much more effective.
Well, sarcastically, the... Now, this grant that was used during Commerce Secretary Burke's time, apparently the state will have to repay the federal government the $12.5 million for that economic development grant that I guess so didn't meet the criteria of HUD. And so that is, I guess, your thoughts first, Peg, on whether, you know, that the specific problem that Scott Walker is pointing out that Mary Burke is to blame for, he says, and whether or not Scott Walker has wasted economic development money too.
Well, first of all, I think that it's clear that he has, and certainly his doing something doesn't. When Scott Walker does something, it doesn't mean that he it prevents him from criticizing opponents for doing the same thing. I mean, you know, we talked earlier about the out-of-state money. Mary Burke had $1.5 million of out-of-state money she's raised. On the other hand, even before this election reporting period, over half of the money that Scott Walker has raised has come from out-of-state sources. So, and that's in the tens of millions of dollars. So, I mean, this notion of she's done this and isn't this horrible doesn't mean that he hasn't done it himself. I think that when it comes to this issue, it gets complicated, and I don't know that we've necessarily heard the end of it, because it sounds like it's going to become one of these thematic things that lives throughout the election cycle for a while. But it is something where, indeed, the ball was passed on this to the Walker administration, so we do have some exploring to do as to, quote, who to blame. I think, though, that the caller in Kenosha is absolutely correct, that this is just such a small piece of what's going on in this state when it comes to these various scams in some cases in order to try to bring business to the state. Obviously, none of it's been effective, and then the question becomes, you know, who can try to turn that tide as governor after November of this year?
Let me, before I'm keen to respond, after we take Frank in Onalaska. Hi, Frank.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I'm just amazed that not only your current guests, but the Burke campaign has totally not addressed the scandal that continues at the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. I mean, there's specific examples of that company not only not tracking the millions of dollars they're giving away in loans and tax credits, but the recent example that's been identified by Bill Reuters and I think the Wisconsin Information Campaign about at least two Wisconsin companies that were given excessive tax, millions of dollars of tax credits, and then laid off and moved jobs away. So the fact that both the media and the Burr campaign doesn't address these types of scandalous and maybe even criminal activity on the part of the Walker administration is just incompetent. So I guess I'd like to address how come you guys haven't brought that up, because that is a cesspool of problems, I think, that's just occurring. And, there hasn't been an adequate audit. You don't just give away millions without knowing where that's going. And the fact that they're connected to Walker's campaign, donors and that type of thing, just suggests how bad that type of economic activity is.
Really. Yeah, all right. So there's a lot of problems of Scott Walker's administration wasting money through WEDIC, Keene Winters. What's your response to that?
Certainly, I think we've already touched on the notion that the way economic development is carried out by a lot of governments has weaknesses in it. But I think it's fair. Mary Burke has made claims that she will do better, and she has a record, and it's fair for the Walker campaign to take a tangible example of that record and put it out in front of people so that they understand what her actual record is. And she's invited that by making certain claims. And so that's fair in terms of campaign. So the things that I would, disagree about is Wisconsin still has a lower unemployment rate, almost a point lower than the national, and that it's true that all Midwestern states, all our neighbors, have been growing less, creating jobs at a lower rate than the national average. But as the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance points out, we are doing better than most Midwestern states. And so the assertion that job creation here has been awful, I think, is one that bears some scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. Peg?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry, but I got disconnected from many of Frank's comments.
Oh, let me mention that he was critical of Democrats in general and Mary Burke's campaign for not pointing out the various scandals with WEDIC, Governor Walker's economic development agency.
Well, first of all, let me compliment Mary Burke, because I think she's been trying to do a positive campaign, or at least so far she's been able to engage in a campaign of that sort, talking about her strengths, talking about her vision for Wisconsin, talking about job creation. Frank is absolutely right. There's plenty to criticize Governor Walker on. Where are the 250,000 jobs he promised? Let's start with that. Secondly, there's the issue of the problems that have arisen in WEDIC, problems involving money's going to certain people, the relationship between, say, campaign contributions and assistance, that kind of thing. I think that will all come out as this campaign goes on. Tragically for Wisconsin, citizens really don't focus on these elections until about a month or two before they take place. And I think that as things evolve in the campaign, you're going to hear some more about that. But again, I hope Mary Burke at least stays on her positive track, because I think voters are at a point now where they want to see people talk about solutions and not just about failures.
Mary Burke's campaign also launched a new ad this week. And this ad was primarily, a biographical ad where she she focused on her background and life experiences and Trek bicycles. She said in it, Wisconsin deserves a governor who puts you first. Peg, your reaction to, that particular ad, as opposed to, the governor's ad, which went after her for one of her decisions during the Doyle administration.
Well, again, I think that it's a nice positive ad. I think it tells people something about Mary Burke. It talks about, we view Trek Bicycle as this big concern now with, 1,000 jobs in Wisconsin and a bicycle name that is well-respected worldwide. I think that
We forget that these kinds of businesses start oftentimes with very humble beginnings. And indeed, in Mary Burke's case, that's the case with the company her dad founded and she helped develop. So I think Wisconsin voters need to see that, need to see her connection with the state, need to see her connection with ordinary folks in places that aren't big corporate boardrooms. And I think this this ad exemplifies what's kind of been the American dream for a long time, which is you have an idea, you put it to work, you work hard and develop a company such as Trex Become, and she's been an integral piece of that as best we can see from the outside, and she should be taking credit for that and letting voters know.
Mm-hmm. Keen?
Well, I think a biographical ad is important for a candidate like Burke who hasn't necessarily been introduced. And so I think it's good campaign work in the sense, though, I do think she stretches it and really takes a lot of credit for her father's work more than she should. And I think that's an issue. Who's she going to put first? Well, it depends on who is you and I don't know who you is. I'd like a governor who puts efficient administration and fiscal soundness first and not necessarily is offering to essentially bribe people for votes.
Quickly get you to react to newly unsealed documents in the ongoing lawsuit challenging an investigation into possible illegal campaign activity by conservative groups and Governor Scott Walker's 2012 recall campaign have shed little light on the probe. These new documents were publicly released on Wednesday by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeal over objections from the conservative group Wisconsin Club for Growth, which wanted to keep them secret. Pegged to John Doe 2 documents and whether or not this is an issue that's going to have legs in this campaign.
Well, I think all the documents should be released. When it comes to campaign and public transparency is an issue, that's very different from whether or not you have the ability to spend huge amounts of money. That goes to whether or not we need to know who is having influence on elections and how they are doing it and to what. So to me, transparency is number one, and whatever these documents are that involve transparency in elections, election funding, and what's going on in campaign committees is something that's needed. So I hope that at some point these documents get released. They tend not to be pretty, and they tend to eventually go away because, unfortunately, the public has got this view of campaigns and elections being corrupt and controlled by big money anyway. So I think that that's something that it's hard to get legs, I guess, when it comes to political and media coverage of them. That being said, I think it goes right to what Keen just said before, which is do you bribe people for votes? And if indeed the money is such that it appears as though money is being used to bribe people for votes, then the public certainly has a right to see it. And the way to get past all of this is to open up the papers, open up the results of the investigation. We have a history in this nation of records being public and for things to be put out in the open. And I think these two John Does are no exception to that. When they're completed and when they're over, those records should be made public and let the public decide.
Yeah. So, Keen, how big an issue is this going to be in November?
I think a moderate one. I think it's probably walked out far enough that we've reached at least a legal conclusion that there is nothing here to see. And so my concern would be, look, I'm a big advocate of transparency, and you'll find it here in the Wausau City Council. I'm often doing that. But there are cases where we're dealing with human resource issues, we are dealing with investigations, and where people deserve a degree of privacy. You can't just essentially seize all somebody's private communications and make them essentially embarrass them publicly when there is, in fact, no legal reason to do that, or there's been really they haven't committed a crime. Now, if there's been a crime committed and the courts have determined that, that should come out. But if we're just releasing the information as another attempt to essentially comb through them and look through the most embarrassing or injudicious statement that we all make in our emails privately for further embarrassment, I think that's really bending the transparency argument in a way that we shouldn't.
But when those emails involve a government official, you'd agree with me, though, that they're public, correct?
I would. Yeah, that they should be public, but when they're part of an investigation and when the investigation proves that reaches a conclusion that no laws have been broken, then it's now in if they're from a government official, if they're just talking about a government official, that's another issue altogether.
Well, you know, to put it in perspective, though, Keen, like with the Wisconsin public records law, I know when I was attorney general, I had emails sent to me wishing me well in dealing with breast cancer. Those are considered public emails. That is certainly something that's personal, but yet the government decides that I'm a government official and I'm in a different thing. And if you want to communicate with a government official, that's generally public records. So I think that this notion of if people are communicating with somebody who's governor or with somebody who is a high political appointee of a governor, and it involves things like campaigns, elections, or how the government is doing business, those certainly need to be made public. And the standard that is used shouldn't be whether or not they were part of an investigation which gave rise to or did not give rise to criminal allegations, but rather whether or not even before that investigation took place, whether those records are public or not. And in this case, they would have been. And in fact, what took them out of the public purview was the fact that they were part of an investigation. So until that investigation's open, they're private, but then they should be public again. And I think that that's, you know, how we've done business in Wisconsin, and the governor shouldn't be exempt from that.
We are reviewing the news of the week. We will continue. Coming up, we have our Week in Review quiz. We'll talk about some news being made this week in the 6th Congressional District, the Republican primary to replace U.S. Representative Tom Petri. And we'll also talk about some national issues, including how we think President Obama is handling the crisis at the U.S.-Mexican border. That's coming up on the Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Time for our Week in Review quiz. The city of Superior is celebrating quite the milestone this week. What finally happened in Superior on Monday, July 7th? 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll give you 5 minutes to call in or email your answer. We'll randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers and announce the answer and the winner at the end of the program. All right, what milestone did the city of Superior celebrate this past Monday? Well, here's a hint. It has to do with the weather. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking this week with Keen Winters, a financial planner in Schofield, a member of the Wausau City Council, and Peg Lautenschlager, a former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin, a former state legislator, former U.S. attorney, and attorney with the law firm of Bauer and Bach. Well, let's talk about the 6th Congressional District. All 4 Republicans running to represent the 6th District in Congress say that they will impose term limits if elected. The issue came up when State Representative Dewey Strobel wrote a column saying that he supports congressional term limits. The others, State Senator Glenn Grothman, State Senator Joe Lipum, and an Oshkosh resident, Tom Dino, followed suit and said that they would also only serve a limited number of terms. Well, Keen, are term limits for members of Congress a good idea?
Well, they might be a reasonably good idea. I'm just not sure that idea is in fashion anymore and that it's going to make a big difference in the campaign. And certainly with all four of them agreeing, it's certainly not a deciding issue.
Mm-hmm. Peg?
Well, certainly, that idea, as Keene points out, was fashionable at one point. I don't know that that's a big issue anymore. I think that we've seen in a lot of states where there are very strict term limits that you forfeit kind of a sense of institutional history when people are limited to a certain amount of time and grade there. I think also we're seeing that kind of procedure sometimes leads to these intense partisan divides because you have people who are not – the intent was to try to get people who wouldn't always be looking for what's, you know, their next election and trying to play it safe and stay there forever. But instead what we've seen is people jockeying about to try to move to higher office because they'll soon be term limited out of the office which they currently hold. So I think that from that standpoint, the term limits kind of backfired. But that being said, obviously you've got a situation here where Glenn Grossman and Joe Lieberman, I guess, are running as pretty strong candidates. And as a result, you have folks like Dewey Strobel and Mr. Dino from Oshkosh in a situation where they are trying to get media attention in various ways. And I think for Strobel, this was an attempt to draw some light on something where he thought he might be able to differentiate himself from the two people who are perceived as the front runners.
Also in the sixth, the Lipum and Grothman announced they will not participate in this coming Monday's debate sponsored by the League of Women Voters. They cited the League's opposition to voter ID and other conservative election reforms. The other two candidates will be there, though. So, I don't know, Peg, is this a good or a bad move by Grothman and Lipum to not go to this forum?
Well, I think it kind of plays off of, the last issue as well. You see that the two folks considered to be underdogs in the race are anxious to have this sort of forum so they can get out and say what they think. Now, apparently, at least I think Grothman and Lipum both have purported to turn down the invitation based on the fact that the League of Women Voters has taken stances which the two candidates believe to be anti-Republican agenda. And as a result, they're doing that. I think if I were either one of their campaign manager, I'd say stay away from this forum because you don't want to be put on the spot about anything on which you have strong views. You don't want to take the risk of having a faux pas be made, which could cost you the election by having it replayed over and over again. So I think that this is breaking down more based on the relative strengths of the candidates and not based on any ideological issues that are at hand.
Keene?
Well, I agree with Peg. If I was running a campaign, she's far more experienced at doing this, and it was the campaign manager. And I thought my candidate was being baited into a forum where they would be placed at a disadvantage or potentially embarrassed, I would avoid them, tell them to avoid it. But I would also, this may not be politics 101, but it's maybe politics 121. Don't say anything other than it doesn't fit in your schedule. And so I expect better performance from experienced campaigners like Grothman and Lipum to not have gone to the place where they do. I would have to say, quite frankly, that was a mistake.
Well, we have to move on to the national issues. You know, we concentrate our Week in Review much more on state issues now because we have On Point covering national and international issues in depth. The On Point Week in the News coming up in our next hour. But let's talk about President Obama asking Congress for nearly $4 billion to deal with minors, children from Central America who are illegally crossing into the U.S. from Mexico. Should Congress give the president what he wants here, Keene?
Well, I think they should give him a fair hearing. We have a crisis here, and we certainly have to do something about it. And I'm glad that the president reached out to Rick Perry and reached out to other sides. I do think, though, it's incumbent on the president to do more to solve this. This is the Pottery Barn rule. You broke it. You own this. And now he's not got to own up to the fact that he's created a problem and he needed some help solving it. If he'll go that far, I think there's some real opportunity to get some solutions here. But he has to acknowledge some things, that the executive order caused this, that the border is so porous that 10-year-olds can walk across it, these people will, when they get here, these children become dependents. And if we go to a general amnesty, it'll certainly cause another flood. And so if you can acknowledge all of those things, and then on the flip side, the Republicans need to acknowledge that simply shipping people back, particularly shipping these kids back to some third world orphanage, is really not a good solution. Then I think we have the makings of some real policy. And I'm an advocate of opening more immigration. In the 21st century, America is going to compete with China and India for economic power. They start the game with four times more people than we have. We need more people in this country.
Peg.
Well, first of all, the fact that we're apprehending, if you want to call it that, or obtaining all of these children is testament to the fact that the Border Patrol is doing its job, because as these kids cross the border, we pick them up. The problem is that there are so many trying to cross the border. So they're here and they get across, I guess it seems as though that's a lot of the conservatives have in mind, that we're going to do some sort of East Berlin-style wall so that they can never quite step foot on American turf, therefore it isn't our problem. Indeed, what we have is border security that says when you're crossing the border, we usually end up picking you up. Now, the issue becomes unique when it involves children from countries other than Mexico or Canada, because in 2008, I believe it was, we passed a law unanimously, voice vote from Congress, that said that if these kids are not from Canada or Mexico, we are going to allow them administrative hearings, immigration-style hearings, to determine whether or not they should immediately be sent back to their country. We did so for a very, very good reason, and a reason that was supported by conservatives as well as liberals, which was a lot of these kids who were coming from countries not adjacent to ours were being smuggled in as sex slaves, as people who were going to be going to work in unconscionable conditions and things like that. But we are getting those kids at the border because we have good border control, and they are being given their due process in terms of not being shipped back to horrible situations, making sure that the reasons they aren't being shipped here were inappropriate. And now we are having to deal with the results of that law. And rather than simply blame the president, as some are wont to do, the president has said, okay, guys, let's put our money where their mouths are and make these changes. Get more border patrol. Get more administrative law judges who can hear these cases and expedite sending kids back, if indeed that's what's appropriate. And
I need to jump in because we have just a minute to go, and we're going to run out of time. I need to congratulate Tori and Eau Claire as our Week in Review quiz winner. She correctly answered that the milestone that the city of Superior celebrated this past Monday was the last bit of snow melted in Superior this week. And in any case, in the news as well that we just saw from the Weather Service, the polar vortex is coming back. We will get a visit from the polar vortex sometime next week. It's not going to be quite as cold as it was in the winter, but we'll probably see, you know, temperatures dip into the 50s with highs barely getting out of the 50s. So it's going to be a cool week in Wisconsin thanks to the polar vortex next week. Peg and Keen, thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Joy.
Pleasure as always, yes.
Keen Winters is a financial planner in Schofield, and Peg Lautenschlager is a former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.